The Ministry of Truth.
Very good evening to all of you. This is the Ministry of Truth.
Hello.
Hello, is this the Libyan Embassy in London?
Yes.
It is. I'm calling from WUSB Radio in Stony Brook. In Stony Brook, New York, United States.
Hello.
Hi, are you inside the embassy right now?
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me? Are you inside the Libyan embassy in London right now?
What number are you dialing, please?
I'm dialing the Libyan embassy in London.
This is the consulate, yes?
Okay, I'm calling from American radio. I was wondering if you could tell our listeners what's going on over there.
No, I'm sorry, I have no information at all.
No information? Are you still surrounded by the police?
No comment at all, please.
No comment. Okay, well, I hope you have lots of food in there. Good luck. Oh, boy. Well, that's what's happening over there in Libya, or actually in London. You want to know what's happening in Libya? Okay. They surrounded the embassy over in Libya as well, the English embassy, and they're not surrounding it any longer. We're going to try to get the number to that, but I think you'll hear a weird recording. Yes, hi, operator. We're trying to get overseas information for Libya. Thank you. Some operators have never even heard of Libya. This person sounds like he might be able to find it. Anyway, the voice you just heard before that, they caught us kind of fast. I wasn't expecting them to answer the phone quite that quickly, but that was somebody inside the Libyan embassy in London, which is currently surrounded by British police, in case you haven't.
Sir, where in Libya?
I'm calling the capital city, which is Tripoli.
Residence. Last name?
I'm actually looking for an embassy over there.
Okay, what?
The English embassy.
English embassy?
Yeah.
British,
Eric. Oh, British,
okay,
English.
One moment, please.
Great British, United Kingdom, who cares? Anyway, as I was saying, before that little beep happened. Oh, here we go.
The line you call is busy. Please call later.
Hold on, I'll try it again for you, sir.
Okay. He's going to try it again, but he's going to get the same recording because we've been getting that recording for 2 days now. Yeah. All phones are busy over there.
I said busy, sir.
Okay, well, thank you for your attempt.
Very welcome. Sorry, maybe try a little later.
Okay, bye-bye. AT&T tried. Anyway, with regards to the update on the situation, the embassy over in London is still surrounded by London police, and the Libyan people are in there. Somebody fired a submachine gun at a bunch of demonstrators, a bunch of anti-Qaddafi demonstrators, and they killed a British policewoman, injured a whole bunch of other people, some of them seriously, and it's quite a standoff now. They're not really saying anything else, as you heard for yourself. They're not talking to anybody, including American radio. Oh, well. My name's Eric Corley, and this is the Ministry of Truth, where we can do really anything we want. But we want you, most of all, to call us. Our number is 246-7901, area code 516. Give us a call now and let us know what's been happening during this week of yours, or during last week since we talked to you last, or if you've never called us before, feel free to call us now. 246-7901, area code 516. And it has been quite an interesting week with regards to international developments and things like that. It's the week that spring seems to have finally come, and, well, all kinds of nice things are happening. Easter is on its way, and all kinds of other things are happening, too. Looks like we have a call, but I'm not sure until the magic light goes on. The magic light has gone on. We have a call.
Radio and...
Sure. Hello.
Wait. Turn down your radio and...
What's going on over there?
Radio and...
Hello?
USB, you're on the air.
Oh, is this Eric Carley?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes. I don't think you caught it when you were talking to London. You had the Libyan consulate. You didn't have the embassy.
Oh, no?
He said, this is the Libyan consulate.
Yeah. Is that within the embassy?
No, that's a separate building.
Well, that's funny, because I called information to get that number, and I asked for the embassy, and that's the number they gave me.
If you have a tape or something, you can play it back, and the fellow's in the consulate.
Yeah, no, you're right. He did say the consulate. I just assumed it was attached or something.
Yeah.
But he still didn't give any kind of comment, so I assume he knows what's happening over there. He's been told not to talk by somebody.
I'm sure that's true, yes. I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
I just wanted to correct you on the, or make sure you picked up the fact that it wasn't really the embassy.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, thanks for pointing that out.
Bye-bye.
246-7901 is our number, and we have a special guest that we will be introducing momentarily, and he'll be taking your questions and giving all kinds of answers about various interesting things. In fact, I guess we might as well introduce him now.
Okay, hello.
Well, we do things a little bit differently on this program. I'm going to ask you to say hello first, and then I'll introduce you.
Okay, hello.
All right. You want to try that again? Oops, I put you in the wrong mode. Here we go. Try it now.
Okay, hello.
There we go. All right, that's going to sound very confusing to our listeners. That was the voice of Jeff Schrenzel, who is more or less an expert on drugs and alcohol. Would you say that's so?
Well, say I've had a lot of experience counseling people.
You work over at the ministries in Corum now.
Yeah, that's correct.
And what exactly do you do there?
I coordinate a drug and alcohol counseling program and a youth counseling program for people who feel they may be beginning or may be experiencing some type of drug or alcohol problem.
Uh-huh. Okay. What would you like people to call up and talk about?
Well, I guess I'd like people to call up and discuss either possibly themselves or boyfriend or a girlfriend, some relationship they're in, or someone they just care about who may be experiencing a drug or alcohol type problem, and maybe in there talking about the situation, I could come up with some ideas how they may be able to help these people or how someone might be able to go for help themselves.
Okay, our number is 246-7901, area code 516, if you have any questions along that nature. Perhaps you can give us a little bit of background information as to what the most common types of drug abuse, or perhaps the most unknown types of drug abuse are today.
Sure. Well, lately, of course, cocaine has become a very important drug to be abused. But, of course, that's really for people who can really afford it. It's not the drug that I think the majority of the population will use. And, of course, the drug of choice in terms of abuse is the drug that has always been the drug of abuse, and that's alcohol, of course.
Uh-huh. You say cocaine is relatively recent. Wasn't cocaine legal back in the 20s?
Well, that's correct, except that it's only recently that it's become a glamour drug, where a whole subculture has really formed around it, and I think that's made it as tempting to be abused as the physiological and psychological effects of the drug itself.
Mm-hmm. Which are?
Mood of elation, feeling of getting extra energy, loss of appetite, being able to stay awake for quite a while, and generally a feeling of euphoria. And the drug is really so dangerous because it works, and it makes people feel good. And it's not a very long-lasting drug, that after 20 or 40 minutes, the effects of the drug begin to wear off. And, of course, if someone wants to continue to feel that euphoric feeling, they're really going to have to do more of the drug. And unlike some drugs that are sedatives that end up physiologically depressing one's body and maybe falling asleep, cocaine energizes someone, so it's really hard to OD on the drug, which means that someone's going to want to keep on doing it. And that's part of the problem with cocaine abuse.
It lasts for 20 to 40 minutes. So is that considered average in the world of drugs as far as an effect lasting?
No, it's really considered a short-term, very short-acting drug.
If you smoke some pot or something, how long does that usually last?
Well, if somebody smokes some pot, it's really going to last about 3 to 4 hours if someone's seriously considering smoking it.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, if someone's going to be drinking and somebody's going to continue to drink in terms of an evening, you know, they could really keep going for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours. So so in that sense, cocaine is really a very dangerous drug. But I wouldn't want to say that that's really the drug problem on Long Island. The drug problem on Long Island, and I think here at the university, I have done some workshops here at the university. The drug problem at the university is really alcohol. And in a sense, there's no reason why it shouldn't be alcohol, because the university campus is really just a smaller version of our larger society, where alcohol is really the main drug being abused today.
Okay, before I get into this point I want to make, I just want to give out the phone number one more time. This is a call-in program. You're welcome to give us a call if you have any questions for Mr. Schrenzel regarding drugs and alcohol and things like that. And my next point, well, let me give the phone number. It's 246-7901, area code 516. My next point revolves around something I just said. I said drugs and alcohol, and that's a common phrase. Now, what you said here pretty much implies that alcohol is a drug. Why are we so accustomed to saying drugs and alcohols if it was something else?
Well, I think it makes people feel better that alcohol is one of the few drugs that are completely legal, I guess, these days, if you're at least 19 years old. And for that reason, I think people want to separate it and feel that if one's doing alcohol, it's not as serious as if someone is doing drugs. And, of course, that's really a fallacy because someone who's having a problem with alcohol, it's not only himself or herself that one is hurting, that alcoholism is really a family type problem, because it affects spouses in relationships, it affects children, and those people are really the hidden victims of alcoholism. And I think to the extent that we say that alcohol drinking is okay, we really end up deluding some people into thinking that there's no problem with it. And I just want to say, of course, there's nothing wrong with social drinking, but a lot of people are not social drinkers, and they're able to keep thinking that they are. So part of the problem is the societal attitude about alcohol also.
How can you tell if you've gone over the line if you're no longer a social drinker and you have a problem? What are some points?
Okay, well, you know, of course, if you're going to ask someone who has a drinking problem whether or not they could stop, I think chances are they'll say that they can't stop. They're not really the most objective person to ask if they can stop.
Mm-hmm.
I think someone has an alcohol problem when it begins to interfere with either their schooling or relationships or a job or family, and in spite of that interference, they continue to drink. So those people, I would say, would be beginning to have an alcohol problem.
I guess one point that most people make when they are asked if they have an alcohol problem, they always say that they can stop if they want to. I guess it's sort of like a cigarette smoker or anyone who's hooked on something. Is that a sign to watch out for, defensiveness?
Yeah. When I talk to people who obviously are becoming dysfunctional with their alcohol use, it's amazing the kinds of rationalizations that people come up with in terms of stopping. People have a misconception that if they only drink once in a while, that they don't have an alcohol problem. Or if they only drink on weekends, or if they only drink beer rather than hard liquor, that it's not a problem. And again, the real issue is whether or not it's interfering with parts of their life and whether they continue to drink. And I think to answer that question, you can't really always ask the person who's doing the drinking. You have to ask someone a bit more objective, someone around him, a friend, someone in the family to answer that question, because the alcoholic is not always the best person to be able to answer that question objectively.
There's been quite a lot of legislation recently with regards to drunk driving laws. Are you involved with that? Are you aware of things happening that we may not be?
I'm not any more involved with it than you people are. I know on campus here that there was quite a lot of opposition to the raising of the drinking age. I think society has the right idea in wanting to educate people against alcohol abuse. One could say, are they really penalizing young people disproportionately for that? And of course, a lot of people say that they are. So I don't have an answer to that. I think the general notion of preventive education is good. I'm not so sure that raising the driving age is the only way to go about doing that.
Raising the driving age?
The drinking age.
Drinking age.
It's funny I made that slip because, in a sense, another way to go about stopping all those accidents would be to raise the driving age, but no one, of course, has thought of doing that.
Yeah. There have been all kinds of changes. Now, of course, the most recent one being the change in New York State from 18 years to 19 years as far as being allowed to drink alcohol. Do you think that achieved anything? I hear all kinds of reports from the state about how many lives were saved, but how do they know how many lives were saved? That's one thing I've always wondered about. How can you measure something like that?
Well, I think the only way to measure that is to look at the deaths that have been involved in auto accidents and look at the ages of the people who have died and see if that's gone down in relation to the drinking age being raised. But I really think a more important issue is the one of general education in relation to drinking. And if we could get into it, I know that at the university here that there's been a push in the last year or two to have workshops and to really educate people about the abuses that can go on in terms of use of alcohol. And I'm wondering if we could talk about that a little bit, and also the notion of why people may find themselves drinking, because I think the college age population, I think, is very vulnerable to potential alcohol abuse.
Well, I'd like to ask our listeners some questions to perhaps inspire them to call us. I realize it might be kind of hard to approach this subject from the outside. We may be asking people to do something that they don't really want to lend their voices to. It is a serious problem. I'd like to ask if people out there are knowledgeable about the push to bring the drinking age up to 21. How do they feel about that? Do they have friends that have drinking problems? Have they noticed much of a drinking problem, either on campus or off campus? How does society in general make things easy to become an alcoholic or a drug addict? I'd like to talk a little bit more about drugs, too. I mean, the other kind of drugs, the ones where we consider drugs. Our number is 246-7901, area code 516. Feel free to call up with any question about drugs that you might have, except prices or something like that. We just might get those kind of calls. I would like to talk a little bit more about other kinds of drugs. What, besides cocaine, you were talking about marijuana before the program began. Is that much of a problem? Is that addictive? Does it cause problems? I've heard people say that they become a lot more aware when they smoke marijuana. They see things a lot more clearly. Are they telling the truth, or is that just...
Well, there's a lot of subjectivity in terms of how one responds to using different drugs. And, of course, the same amount of a drug taken by two different people, the people may feel different effects from it from a subjective point of view. I think the danger with much marijuana use is really in relation to how one uses it and how often one uses it, what purpose one uses it for. I think we would all have to admit that marijuana is not the dangerous drug that people thought it was 10 or 15 years ago, that it's not physically addicting. As a matter of fact, the only real proof that they have about the drug is, well, first of all, pregnant women shouldn't take it, but of course that probably relates to really any drug, that when one smokes a lot of marijuana, that it's considered the same as being a heavy smoker in terms of what it does to one's lungs. Of course, I don't know if that's going to really stop anybody from using a lot of marijuana.
We'll talk about the lung aspect in a second, because that's something I'm interested in. We have a call right now. Our number is 246-7901. USB, you're on the air.
You sure about that?
Yeah, I'm sure. You won't hear yourself for 6 seconds, so don't bother listening.
Oh, really?
What's your question?
All right. I'd like to know what the speaker has to say about hallucinogenics.
You have a question about hallucinogenics? I'd like to try to answer it for you.
I think he was asking what you think about them. What was he?
Yeah, you know, my radio's on, and that's really weird with that six-second delay.
Yeah, why don't you turn your radio down?
Yeah, I'll turn it off.
Scott's a good idea. I think he hung up at the same time. Oh, I hope he didn't. Yep, he did. Okay, well, call back if you can remember the number, 246-7901. Maybe you could begin talking about hallucinogenics and sort of lead into this guy.
Sure. The real danger with hallucinogens is that it's a psychotropic drug, and what that means is that it really works on one's mind. What happens, and of course this could be a pleasurable effect of the drug too, is that one gets to experience certain feelings and certain sensations and have certain thoughts that ordinarily they wouldn't have. That's where the term mind expansion, you know, mind expanding drugs came in. Well, before I get into the dangers, I want to say, you know, many people have taken these drugs and have found the drugs to be very pleasurable. Of course, each person's subjective experience will be different, and a lot of it will depend on the setting, whether one's in a comfortable setting, a relaxed setting, before they take an hallucinogenic drug. But a lot of it will also depend on how stable the person is in terms of being able to handle the feelings and effects of the drug.
Okay, before you get into that, we're going to go back to the phone. I think we have the same person on again. USB, you're on the air.
Okay.
Ah, it's you again. Okay, go ahead.
It's me again. Yes, I wanted to ask the guest what he had to say about hallucinogenics.
Okay, we already started talking about hallucinogenics.
I'm listening to it, though.
Okay, do you have a specific question?
I wanted to hear what he had to say about him first. I did hear something I disagree with, though.
Oh, go ahead. What is it?
And that is that marijuana is physically addicting.
Well,
you know, I don't know how. Another thing I'd like to ask, and I'll hang up so I can listen, I guess, is how many drugs this fellow has done and what perspective he's actually counseling from. Because I don't think you can really counsel drug abusers and users unless you've been there yourself at some point in time.
Well, I'm glad.
I'm going to hang up now, and let me hear what he has to say.
Okay.
Thanks for that.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
246-7901 is our number. Go ahead. And
well, I'm glad he asked that question. I really expected that someone would ask it. The first question, let me answer about marijuana, is that marijuana is not physically addicting. Now, I don't know, you know, everybody seems to have a different definition of what addiction is. When I say that marijuana isn't physically addicting, that really has nothing to do with whether or not someone psychologically will begin to become habituated to it and will want to continue to use the drug more and more. The idea with physical addiction is that after a while, your body physically craves the drug and needs the drug to function normally. Now, this has nothing to do with whether one's mind needs the drug to feel good, whether one needs to smoke marijuana every day to be able to function. We're talking about physiologically. We're not talking about psychologically. So in that sense, marijuana is not physically addicting, but any drug, of course, could be psychologically habit-forming if one does it enough and if one has the tendency to want to make a drug habit-forming in that way. The question about counseling and the question about whether or not I've used drugs, I welcome that question. I really feel that whether or not I've used drugs is really not the issue that needs to be talked about. I think when I describe the way I counsel, maybe this listener and other people who are listening would feel that I would be empathic and understanding whether or not I have had any kind of drug or alcohol history. I think the main issue with counseling anyone who is using drugs and anyone who is using alcohol, first of all, is not to be critical of them, not to put them down for doing what they're doing, and to understand that when people use drugs and alcohol, they really do that to help them cope, with something that's troubling for them, and that in a sense they're really trying to cope the best way they can with whatever type of problem they're experiencing. So I think when I counsel people, I try to get them to become more in touch with their thoughts and feelings to see what's underneath the drug and alcohol use. In a sense, it's just a symptom, and I really want to get to what's going on underneath the person. In terms of being judgmental, I think that one cannot be a good drug or alcohol counselor if they're going to be judgmental about the use and abuse of drugs or alcohol.
Our telephone number once again is 246-7901. If you have any questions or comments about drugs and or alcohol, let's go to the phones. USB, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd just like to make a sort of a statement about society and drugs, if I may.
Go ahead.
Okay. I think society makes it very easy to turn to drugs for relief. Drugs relieve the pressures of school and makes my life more bearable. I often turn to drugs, sometimes 3 or 4 times a day. Well, good talking to you. Thanks. I enjoy your show.
Sure. Sounded like he was reading that, didn't it?
I guess so.
Okay. Well, 246-7901 is our number. What do you think of the comment about society making it so easy? Is it easier in this society than in others, or are others just as bad?
Well, one thought I have is that I think this society is a very pressured society, that I think a lot is demanded of people as they're growing up. I'm thinking of college-age students. I'm thinking of the pressures they have in terms of school. I think of the university here. I think it can be an alienating place. It's a rather large university. The temptation is always going to be there. I'm not going to say that drug or alcohol use automatically is wrong or bad. I think the question is whether one has control over his use of drugs or alcohol, and whether it's in the long run getting for him or her what they're looking for. I think that the danger with excess drug or alcohol use is really that one never learns how to cope without the drug or without the alcohol. And he's very right in saying that he turns to drugs to help him cope with things. In a sense, I don't blame him because, we can imagine that if he didn't turn to drugs or alcohol, things would be much worse. I think the question really is if one could learn other coping mechanisms and not have to turn to drugs or alcohol to cope with things.
Well, what are other coping mechanisms?
Well, I think other coping mechanisms are finding alternative ways to feel better, getting in touch with one's feelings to understand why one is feeling a certain way, and seeing if there are things that could be done to alleviate those kinds of feelings. The trouble with drug use is that when one feels better, it's really only temporary, and nothing is really being done to alleviate the problem that's causing the feelings in the first place. So I'm from the point of view that if that could be done, if one could look at why one is having the problem in the first place, where they need to use drugs or alcohol to help them cope, then they'd be on the way to solving some of their difficulty. I just want to say that, you know, in this day and age, we talk about the social drinker. I guess we'd also have to talk about the social pot smoker.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, just because someone smokes pot, I'm not condoning it, but I think it's, you know, certainly part of our society today. Again, I think the question is whether or not someone has control over their pot smoking, just like the question is whether one has control over their drinking.
Do you think it should be legalized?
Well, I think for economic reasons, the country could certainly use reducing the deficit, and that might be a way to start. It's really a hard question to answer because one could say, well, if alcohol was never legalized, would they be legalizing it now?
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. I guess I'd have to do more thinking on that.
Yeah, if there was, I was just thinking of a middle ground where something isn't legal, but it's not illegal either. I don't know what you'd call that. But
I guess they tried that with, you know, decriminalization.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's kind of interesting the way the tide turns in a sense where marijuana has now been decriminalized, but there seems to be more of a stigma now for being arrested for DWIs, being arrested for driving while intoxicated. So, you know, it seems like the push now is more in the area of alcohol, where maybe it should be, because I think that's really a larger problem in society than marijuana use.
Our phone number is area code 516-246-7901. The program is the Ministry of Truth, and we're talking with Jeff Schrenzel of the Ministries. Is it still called the Smith Haven Ministries?
Well, we changed the name to the Ministries when we really moved out of the Smithtown, Brookhaven, town line area. We're now in, you know, we're now in Coram, so it's really called the Ministries now.
Okay, so you're a part of the Ministries, and we're talking about drugs tonight and the problems and solutions and all kinds of things like that. We have a phone call. USB, you're on the air.
Hello, my name is Catherine Pinelli, and I just wanted to say I think it's really bad when children are brought up with drugs, like, I don't know, like in their neighborhood or even in the home. And I just wanted to say that especially in the home, it's really bad. Because it's like, you know, your parents walk around, like, you know, you think it's really cool. But then, you know, then the rest of your friends think you're really weird because, you know, your parents are, like, doing drugs. And, you know, they think that, like, they're still from the 60s or they're criminals. And I think that, like, a lot of parents should stop doing drugs, like, especially in front of their children. Because, you know, it's hard when you grow up. I mean, once you turn a teenager, it's really cool because it's like, yeah, you know, I get high with my parents and everything. But, you know, when you're younger, you know, it really, like, alienates you.
Uh-huh. It alienates you to have parents that,
are doing
drugs.
Yeah, they're, like, smoking pot around the house or, like, you know, talking about it or whatever.
What if everybody's parents did it? Do you think that would make it okay?
That would make it okay? Well, you know, I don't know, it depends. Well, I mean, certainly it would be, you know, more culturally acceptable, certainly.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, like, maybe in some tribes somewhere, I'm not really into anthropology or anything, but, you know, maybe some tribes that do some weird practices that, you know, here would be certainly considered unacceptable. But they are.
Well, now, you're talking about the social aspects as far as your friends and what your neighbors think, but do you think there's any physical damage being done?
Do I think there's... Well, certainly any sort of smoking would definitely... make you less physically inclined or something. I mean, you know, your lungs are getting messed up.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, obviously it affects your brain when you're on it. I mean, you know, you can't do calculus that easily unless, you know, some people are brilliant or something. But most people, I would say, it gives them, you know, brain deficiencies or something.
Do you come from a house where this is so?
That's what I'm saying, man. I mean, I really, you know, if it wasn't, you know, I'd probably be telling you, you know, either I wouldn't be into drugs and I just would be saying I'm not into drugs, or else I'd be telling you, hey, man, it's really cool or something, you know.
Well, I wonder if I could say something to the caller. I think if one's parents are smoking a lot of pot, it's really not very different than one's parents doing a lot of drinking. And I think that whether it's pot or alcohol, I think the thing that's bad about it is that your parents really can't end up functioning as parents. And I think what you're saying is that as a teenager, it's like you want your parents to be parents. You don't want your parents to be cool. You know, maybe like them going through some kind of teenage thing themselves. That, you know, I think you're saying that you want your space, to be a teenager. I mean, you know, I don't know how old you are now, but that, you know, you'd like your parents to function as adults and not, you know, not to function as if they were still teenagers.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, thanks for calling us.
Okay, take it easy.
Bye-bye. I don't know what that was. 246-7901 is our phone number. USB, you're on the air.
Oh, all righty. One thing that I just wanted to pose is a question. You mentioned before, which I think is a very good point, that trying to use drugs as a escape from your problems instead of trying to do something about them is not a good way to deal with your life, as you mentioned before. What though of your, I'm curious what your opinion is though. Nothing you can do about your problem in the meantime.
Okay, well, you know, I have to be honest with you. I have a prejudice in that, you know, being a counselor, I couldn't really be a counselor unless I believed that there was something that people could do to help themselves in situations, even if those situations are not good ones for them, or even if there's nothing on the surface that they can do. I think that if someone is using drugs or drinking, to not use drugs or to not drink in that situation without learning any new skills, I think would be very difficult for the person. So in a sense, the drug or the alcohol use is better than nothing in terms of helping the person feel better. The problem comes in is that with only the drug and the alcohol use, there's no possibility of learning alternative ways of feeling better.
Oh yeah, so, I agree with that totally. There is the catch-22 type trap of gee, I apparently solved the problem, so I don't have to worry about it anymore. But if you're really going to mention the word drugs by itself, the one thing you really should also consider, you know, of course not dwell because it's not really the problem, is when you're using drugs for other than actually recreational reasons, a la, you know, just very simply cold pills with allergies.
Okay, well, you know, some drugs are, of course, legal, and some drugs are, you know, are helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess you're making a good point that, you know, isn't to say that all drugs are bad. I think the question is, you know, whether a drug is being abused or not, because...
Yes, that's exactly the point that I'm making.
Because someone can, you know, someone can take too much penicillin, and in a sense, they're abusing penicillin, just like somebody could be abusing an illicit drug.
Exactly my point is that there's a definite difference between drug use and drug abuse.
Well, I think, you know, I think you're right. And I think in our society in general today, I think you see this in commercials and TV, and you see this in a mall. If you go into, I don't know if they still sell it, like in Different Strokes in the Smith Haven Mall where they have drug paraphernalia. I think society is saying, listen, get quick relief. As soon as you can, and of course they even made a commercial like that. So I think everything points to don't try to find out what's underneath, get some relief real quick, and then everything will be okay. So I think it's more that kind of attitude. You're quite right. Rather than making a distinction between what drugs are good or bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the entire routine of quick short routine you have to realize is all part of our society.
I agree with you.
You know, hey, in the same commercial right after that, you have the commercial of buy these jeans at $45 a pop, and you get the girl, too.
Well, I think you're quite right. I'm in total agreement with you.
Thanks for calling, sir.
You're welcome.
246-7901 is our phone number, area code 516. USB, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. My name is Vladimir, and I'm a resident scientist in Stony Brook, and Department of Germanic and Slavic Languages. I come from Soviet Union, and I just want to make a comment about drugs behind the iron curtain. And we don't have drug problems there because there is a death sentence for drug dealers. And
a death sentence for drug dealers?
Yes, mandatory death sentence for all the drug dealers. in the Soviet Union, and it's written in Soviet Constitution. So Soviet Union doesn't have a drug problem. And I think the reason there is a drug problem in the United States is the American government doesn't want to deal directly and eradicate all sources of drug supply.
Uh-huh. How many other countries have this same sentence? Do you know?
I think some socialist bloc countries and maybe Iran at the present moment.
Uh-huh. And you think that's what's doing it? Well, do you think that would work with other types of crimes, too?
No, I don't think it will work with other types of crimes, because here we have a sort of an economical crime. The drug dealers are very powerful in government-connected people, as we can see from certain movies such as Scarface.
Uh-huh.
And you see, what happens, the government wants people to get drugs in this country, all kind of drugs.
Yeah, it is sort of a money
maker. So it keeps people, a lot of people away from the new trends in politics and all kind of movements, and keeps them sort of happy and suppressed and, you know.
Just out of curiosity, the death sentence that you receive for dealing drugs over there, you wouldn't happen to get a lethal injection, would you?
Would
be kind of a fitting way to go, I think.
I think it's a death sentence by a firing squad.
Oh, that's no good. Okay, well, thanks for sharing that with us.
I think we should try it in this country, too.
You think we should?
Okay.
Okay, thank
Bye.
You. Bye.
Could I just say something?
I think he really was from the Soviet Union. Go ahead.
You know, an aside to that is they may not have a drug problem there, but they seem to have no difficulty giving out drugs in mental hospitals for political dissidents. So they have their own uses for drugs in the Soviet Union.
That's for sure.
I think something I wanted to say is that in relation to this society, I think we pay a price for our freedom, so to speak, that I think this is the freest society in the world. And part of that is people's right to mess themselves up. And I guess it's a cost-benefit question. Is it more important to people not to be allowed to mess themselves up, and how much freedom is that going to take away from us? So I think that's very much the issue with a lot of the social questions in the United States today.
Are you moving towards the libertarian view, where a person is pretty much free to do whatever he wants, including committing suicide and all that kind of thing? A person can really do anything he wants, short of hurting other people.
Well, I guess that's the question that I think society is always facing, which direction to go with that.
Uh-huh. Our phones are really lighting up here. 246-7901 is our number. Area code 516. USB, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to say that if you make a drug really hard to get at, people will want it more because they can't really get at it so quickly. If it was legal and everything, people wouldn't really want it that much.
Uh-huh. So you think legalizing all these things would solve the problem?
Yeah, well, it'd bring down the amount of people that use it, because, like, some will use it as a weapon against their parents, because they say, oh, they tell me not to do this, so that's a way of getting back at them.
Uh-huh.
See?
Yeah. What do you think of that?
Well, I think at a person's certain stage of development, I guess when they're a teenager, and maybe I think most teenagers want to rebel in some sense, I think anything that seems exotic, anything that seems not allowed, and anything that's really going to go against the values of one's parents, one might be tempted to do that. But I think once one moves away from that into the 20s, 30s, and 40s, I don't think that a drug being illegal is the thing that causes people to use it. I really don't think that's the case.
Thanks for calling.
All right, thank you.
USB, you're on the air.
Yes. Here, let me turn it off.
Okay.
I'd like to say that illegalizing or legalizing drugs is not going to do the trick, because legalizing is on a legal level, but it's on a social level. And people on a social level have to learn to deal with themselves and the world around them in other ways, like he was saying beforehand. And the only way I can see that can be eradicated is also through education and through counseling, because in counseling, it's a slow process, but you need to learn, relearn how to cope with things. And it's a hard thing to do. And in a society where the market has taken over so many social roles, like sports, and, you know, you want to do something, you go and see a movie. And no one really thinks about going to someone's house and sitting down and talking to them. So in a society that doesn't promote social interaction too much, where we have long work days and all sorts of things like that, it's kind of hard to help people out of that sort of a problem. And like here on the State University of New York, I know that the raising the drinking age won't do very much, mm-hmm. especially when you go to the counseling center, and I know I went there, and I needed help in the beginning of the semester, my first semester here. I tried to get counseling in September, and they put me on a waiting list, and I didn't get anything, I didn't get a call back until November, late November. So in between that time, I was having a hard time here, and I called up the lady and made her responsible for, I needed some sort of counseling or whatnot. But the thing is that that sort of a counseling system is not going to help people to learn how to deal with life that's hard. And it's no joking around. Stony Brook is a hard place to live at. There's a lot of things to deal with that are really, really hard. Red tape, as well as the brick walls that we live in, aren't pretty, and it doesn't help us any to be human. You know, stage 12 looks like a cell, looks like a prison, and that doesn't help. So, I don't know, for Stony Brook, I can say that the counseling center is not prepared to take over any sort of alcoholism problems. And that's pretty much what I had to say.
Okay, do you want to address some of the things?
Yeah, you know, you really said quite a few things there. I was an undergraduate student here myself.
I can't hear you.
I was an undergraduate student here myself a number of years ago, so I can attest to the alienating atmosphere of the school. Getting back to what you first said about laws not really changing anything, I think in terms of social issues, laws are really just stopgap measures until the mores of society sort of catch up to the way the laws are. You know, in a sense, in the 60s with civil rights, you know,
exactly. I was gonna
passing a civil rights law isn't going to guarantee that people aren't going to be prejudiced anymore.
And doesn't happen.
But it's a start. I think when you talk about the university and when you talk about counseling in general, I think you really just have to look at our federal government and the policies of the government in terms of you know, where they're putting their money now, and you know, you could understand why there are waiting lists. As an adjunct counselor at the University Counseling Center, I mean, I can't speak for everybody there, but I do know from having meetings with people that they're quite aware that they're short-staffed. They're quite aware of the waiting period, and I'm not saying that to support anything that your counselor did or didn't do. Just from a policy point of view, I think they're aware that they're not equipped to handle the alcohol problem on campus. And part of the problem is that there really are no funds around for that. And I think that's one reason why I was so excited about coming on the air today, is that I feel I have some referral sources for people that are in the area that I think are good referrals, where people could go outside of the campus here to get some help and hopefully not have to wait so long, because a two-month wait when you're a student is already half a semester or maybe two-thirds of a semester. So I could appreciate the concerns you had.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye now.
Bye. We have time for one more quick call, and then you have some phone numbers to give us, and we'll get right into that. USB, you're on the air. Not anymore. Okay, how about those phone numbers?
Okay, fine. The first thing I'd like to do is give out the phone number for where I work over at the ministries in Quorum. First of all, the address is 2229 Route 112. We're, for all you people who know the area, we're one block north of Nathan's, one block north of Middle Country Road on Route 112. We're open from 9 in the morning to 9:30 at night, Monday through Friday. Something I wanted to say just to relieve some people's anxiety, although the name of the agency is the Ministries, the counseling that's done there is not of a religious nature. I don't want people to think that when they come in there we're going to try to convert anybody or that we necessarily have crosses in all the offices.
Where did that name come from?
Well, the ministry started out, I'm thinking about 15 years ago. It was, it is a church-supported agency. The notion that the churches in the area wanted to go out and to do something in the community rather than the community coming to the church all the time. So it was started as a ministry, and of course the name Smith Haven is Smith Haven was a shortening of Smithtown and also Brookhaven. We were in the Smith Haven Mall, which of course is on the borderline of the two towns. As I said, we have a drug and alcohol counseling program where we see people from the age of 12 on up. We see teenagers, young adults, and adults who may be experiencing a drug or alcohol problem, and also people who may be living with someone who may be experiencing a drug or alcohol problem. Alcoholism is a disease that doesn't only affect the individual, but also the people that he lives with, and I would say the same for drug problems. There is a sliding scale fee to our services. The minimum fee is a dollar, and quite frankly, I've never known anyone who couldn't afford the fees that we have at the ministries. So the phone number is 736-3314, and I would suggest that if people, either themselves or if they know someone who might be willing to go for some help, they could call. And even if someone wanted to call to discuss how they might be able to talk to someone about going for help, they may be able to call for that. If it would be okay, I'd like to give out a couple of other phone numbers so people might have a choice and may want to go to a place that's closest to them. Would that be okay?
Sure.
Okay. I'd like to give out the phone number of another place, an agency in Smithtown called the North Suffolk Mental Health Center, which is on Main Street in Smithtown, and they have an alcohol unit themselves. And that phone number is 265-3311. I'd also like to mention that there are two hospitals in the area that have alcoholism programs. One is South Oaks Hospital in Amityville, I believe, and the other is Brunswick Hospital in Farmingdale. So those are also two possibilities. So rather than go through a whole bunch of referral sources, if people are looking for referral sources, they could always give me a call at the ministries.
Okay, you want to give that number one more time?
Yeah, 736-3314.
Okay, any other numbers you have, or does that pretty much cover it?
There are also programs that relate to alcohol education.
Uh-huh.
But rather than give out those phone numbers, I'd say if people like, they could call and I can more specifically deal with their problems.
Is this a 24-hour service?
No, the ministries is open from 9 to 9:30, Monday through Friday. If people are having any kind of problem after hours, and I'm sure you've given this number out on the radio before, there's a response phone number in Stony Brook. The phone number is 751-7500, which is a 24-hour hotline. So people, people could use that phone number if they need to.
Mm-hmm. All right, fine. We have about a minute left. I'd just like to ask this. It's bearing down on finals week here at Stony Brook, and a lot of people are out there taking their no-doses and various things like that. Any advice for people to survive without getting hooked on something that they don't want to?
Well, I realize that the things that I'm going to say are easy things to say because mm-hmm. I'm not in the middle of studying for finals now. So I realize that. I guess the first thing I wanted to say is that although studying for a certain exam seems to be the most important thing in the world at that particular moment, 2 months, 4 months, or 6 months from now, one would probably have it in perspective. So I guess the question would be whether one could try to keep some perspective even while they're going through all their anxiety studying for their exam. And also, you know, the other issue is that getting involved using certain drugs, that, you know, there's always the time where someone comes down from the drugs. And when if someone has a lot of tests to take and they're busy taking drugs to make them feel up, eventually they're going to have to come down, and that may not be so good in terms of studying for other exams. So I guess I'd say as much as possible, if one could keep on a relatively straight line through exam period, that would be good.
Yeah, sounds reasonable to me. All right, well, thanks very much for joining us, Jeff Scherenzel from the Ministries. And we've been talking about drugs, alcohol, and studying habits and that kind of thing over the last hour. I wish you lots of luck with helping people in this most noble cause.
Yeah, thanks. And I just want to say, if people can make use of our services, please don't hesitate to call.
Give that number one more time.
736-3314.
Okay. Thank you once again for being with us. Next week, the Ministry of Truth will not be on. Instead, we'll have our favorite legislators, Steve Englebright and Gregory Blass, will both be here talking to you, answering your questions about county politics and that kind of thing. So be sure to tune in next week, and we'll be back sometime after that doing all kinds of fun things once again. I'm Eric Corley, and until we meet again, have yourselves a good life. So long.
The Ministry of Truth.